Good evening. Welcome to the fourth MGEV's Community Podcast of 2024, streaming live to you on Monday, the 24th of June, 2024. We're here to discuss MGEVs, hoping to inform and entertain you for about 45 minutes to an hour or so. I'm Tom Sedge, T Sedge on the forum. I live in Devon, and I'm currently driving the MG4 Long Range Trophy that you see behind me. And joining me this week is from South London, Leo Mindell. Welcome, Leo.
Hi there, hi there. I'm actually in North London today, but
Okay.
it's almost another
Over
country,
the
but it's still the same place.
border.
Yeah. You don't show your passports anymore. You just spend a long time traveling. That's all you do.
Fantastic. Yes, it's like another country. And also from Chorley Group MG, the Innovation Development Manager, Miles Roberts. Welcome back, Miles.
Oh, good evening. Miles Roberts, CG on the forum.
Great. Now, if you're watching live, thank you for joining us, and please click the like button and join us in the joining the discussion in the chat window. And if you're watching later on, thank you for choosing to watch this video, and please subscribe to get a notification when we next go live. I'll just say thanks to our premium members: Sloucher, MGBGT2ZS, Very Fat Bloke, Evie Cog, Whiskery, Lagerbaloo, and Big Bear. And if you like what we do at MGEVs, please support us by becoming a premium member. Right, first thing to say is we've got a slightly different format for you tonight. We're coming to you in a shorter and more frequent format. That's our intention, where we focus on specific topics and questions of interest to our audience. We're aiming for 45-minute podcasts more regularly, and we'll rotate the host and we'll change the personnel to make sure that we have the right expertise on hand for you for each podcast. We plan to poll the forums on future questions and topics that you'd like to explore, so please look out for this before our next podcast. On tonight's podcast, we're focused on the forthcoming election in the UK. What are the different parties offering in terms of their policies on EVs, and how do these compare to the past and current policies that we're living with today? But before we get to that, we'll do a quick news roundup, and then we'll end by focusing on any questions that you have. So please put these in the live chat where we can see them. Have a think about what policies you'd like to see and why, including especially if they're not ones offered by any party that you're aware of. And we'll discuss them. So we'll begin tonight with our news roundup. And our main news tonight is topical. Now, there's been some news on the tariff front, Miles, I believe. Tariffs on car
Oh, it's
imports.
yeah. So it was announced last week, the week before, that European Union has decided that they want to start import putting extra tariffs on Chinese electric vehicles, specifically the electric vehicles. They don't seem to be bothered at all about the petrol hybrid, plug-in hybrid vehicles, just EVs. And the perception is from the European Union that the Chinese state is subsidizing electric vehicles in China, and that's making European manufacturers uncompetitive on price. Which, well, yeah, to be fair, I mean, it is interesting that MG can launch a car like the MG4 and win all these awards for doing a car for like 24, 20, 26 and a half grand for the entry level. A lot of other car manufacturers from established brands seem to be sitting close to sort of 35 plus. However, that is changing. I noticed Stellantis, particularly, in terms of Peugeot, Citroën, Vauxhall, has dropped prices quite considerably recently.
Is that
So
in response to this or
I think so, yeah.
advance?
So EU say
Because
that this is an
that
anti-
happened before, didn't it? That when I remember when we go back to the old subsidy days where we used to get a subsidy for buying an EV below a certain
Yeah.
value. When the subsidies were cut, some of the manufacturers, including MG, said, "Well, we're going to pass it on to you. We're going to keep the subsidy by
Yeah, and
making
I
our
think
car cheaper to
Fiat,
compensate."
which is part of Stellantis, did that as well. So when there was like a £5,000 government grant, then it was cut to 4,000, then it was cut to 2,500, and then it was cut to zero. A lot of car manufacturers said, "Oh, we'll carry on offering the 2,500 discount," which suggests that some of these other manufacturers did have, reasonable profit margins in their cars. So EU said this is an anti-dumping measure to protect the EV industry, and it's designed as a temporary communication measure, and the formal import duties are supposed to come into effect after the 4th of July, which coincidentally in the UK is when we're having an election. It only affects Chinese-made electric vehicles sold in Europe, does not affect other Chinese-made products sold in Europe, for example, hybrid, plug-in hybrid, and petrol vehicles. MG sells a variety of vehicles in Europe, including battery electric vehicles, plug-in hybrids, which are produced in China mainly due to the country's strong industrial base and significant investments from MG's parent company, SAIC Motors.
Yes.
This allows MG to control costs effectively and offer competitive products to consumers. MG is facing the highest tariff of 38%.
I had a look at this. So the ones I saw were 17.4% for BYD, the 20% for Geely, and then, as you say, 38.1% for SAIC. And then some kind of vague Tesla will get something, but we're still talking about it.
Yeah, I think with MG, I think the argument by EU is that SAIC Motors didn't enter into discussion with the EU in a timely manner when they asked some questions, and so punishing them with 38.1. I think it's possible because it's sales in Europe of MGs, which in 2023 were 160,000 units, of which 83,000 of them were battery electric vehicles. Probably means that MG's got the highest number of battery electric vehicles being imported, and therefore they're the most likely to put the competitive pressure on the European car makers. Whereas BYD is only a couple of thousand units. Likewise, Geely as well barely started, apart from with the new Smart. So I think that realistically, it's probably the volume of cars that MG has been selling which has made their tariffs go highest. At the moment, it's unclear where this policy is going really. The European Commission says it's going to adjust policies based on market conditions and investigation results. Now, in terms of the UK government hasn't said that they're going to follow this. They've indicated that it might, but they haven't actually agreed to it. Now, what's interesting is that a lot of the car manufacturers, such as BMW and VW, you kind of expect them to get this news and go, well, this is great. We're going to be massively more competitive of selling EVs in Europe. But actually, what's happened is that BMW and VW have said, oh, crikey, this means that probably the Chinese government's going to set its own tariffs on our imports into there. BMW, Mercedes, all these
I
sort of
saw
manufacturers.
they'd floated 25% as a possibility, the Chinese. But then I'd also saw today that there are now talks about tariffs in advance of this coming in, so that there's a possibility that those talks could avoid this or have a breakthrough or change it in some way.
I think a lot of it is posturing by the EU to sort of say, look, we're not happy about about this. I think that, as I say, Mercedes and BMW are a bit worried that they're going to just get tit for tat tariffs, and that in China their cars are going to be massively uncompetitive. And I think as well, given the speed in which the Chinese population are shifting towards EVs, realistically, they've got a lot of homegrown cars that they can choose instead of a BMW or Mercedes, a lot of which are possibly, A, cheaper to start with, and B, just as nice as the more established brands. So I think, the cars like the IML6 that we saw at Geneva, and the LS6, they're very good cars. And if you've got a choice between, having that for 40 grand or getting a Mercedes electric E-Class or whatever for 60, 70 grand, I think that possibly, you'd probably go with the IM anyway. So interesting to see what comes out of this. I think that obviously wait and see what happens with whichever government gets in on the 4th of July in the UK and whether they decide to follow any tariffs from Europe. And the whole point of the Brexit argument was that we didn't have to follow the same tariffs as Europe. So in theory, the fact that we are independent from Europe should give us the
And
flexibility to choose whether we're doing that.
it's worth saying that there is already a 10% tariff in the EU and in the UK on foreign imported cars where we don't have a trade deal. And so these figures are on top of the 10% that's already charged on Chinese imports to the
What
EU.
I've also noticed, what's unclear at the moment is this is says for Chinese-made vehicles, but
And what's the definition of that?
so if if MG has a factory in Malaysia or Thailand and they start producing cars for the UK market in Thailand, would that come under the same tariff?
I was this is the bit that I was interested, because if they go and put the wheel nuts on when the car gets to a certain point, and also that there are there is history of foreign manufacturers. So when there was a Japanese when there was a lot of issues against Japanese manufacturers, then they were making cars in a place that were be a more a suitable or more effective for the European market to be happy with. And it's just trying to find the ways around it. I mean, it is, I can see governments are there to support their own interests, and they are there to make sure that their interests are protected and that they are top of the pile. But also, market forces dictate that people will buy what they want to buy. And I think this is where it will be a very interesting battle. If they start doing this and they start putting a tariff on everything that has a battery coming from China, then your iPhone is going to go up in price. So.
Well, yeah, it can escalate, couldn't it, into other areas, other goods, as it often has happens. Interesting. So we'll have to see what happens, but this is the hot potato to watch in the news that could affect, who knows, your future purchase of an MG, or hopefully not. And in other news, Leo, I hear there's a you've been going to the Marylebone store in London, and you've learned some interesting news.
So living in London, I go past the Marylebone store fairly regularly. I popped in there. This, I believe, is also the head office of MG in the UK. So I popped in to look at the Cybster, which is there. It isn't a real one. If any of you ever go in, you will notice the doors won't open and things like that, from what I can work out. But they said to me that they're moving that to Piccadilly. They're moving that actual concept car over to Piccadilly because they're getting a new concept car that they showed in Beijing in a fairly recently. I knew nothing about this. I believe they want to recapture the MG's title of the fastest road car. And Miles, can you help me on this?
I'll try. So this car was yeah, it was the MG EXE 181. And so this was a concept car which was shown at the Beijing International Motor Show in the end of April. It looks like something from a science fiction film. It's designed to look like the one from sort of the 1950s, which was the Roaring Raindrop, it was known as the MG EX 181. So that vehicle set a speed record of 410 kilometers per hour in 1959, and that held the speed record until 2014. So a significant length of time, sort of over 50 years, that it held the speed record before it was finally beaten by Bugatti. So this has been designed to try and basically beat those speed levels, speed limits. So this one's got a design speed limit of 415 kilometers per hour, a drag coefficient of 0.181, and it's trying to get under 1 second, 0 to 100 kilometers per hour,
And they're going to
which
put it, and they're going to put it in Marylebone, where they've just reduced the speed limit to 20 miles an hour. So it's going to be the ideal place to have it.
Yeah, so it looks fantastic. It's certainly it's a you know stylistically it's a very beautiful design study. Whether that car is ever going to turn a wheel is another matter, but it looks like it's going 400 kilometers an hour even when it's standing still, so.
Great. Well, try and check that out, guys, if you get a chance, if you're in London or you live there. It sounds like quite an exciting thing to see. I'll try myself when I'm next up there. Okay, let's move on to our main topic tonight. So we're going to dive deep into political sphere, but don't worry, it's not going to be personal politics. We're going to talk about the manifestos of the different parties and what they're offering in terms of policies that affect the average EV owner or buyer. Before we dive into what's being offered, let's just remind ourselves what we currently have and indeed what we had in the past. So up until not so long ago, we had a commitment to ban new petrol and diesel cars in 2030. From then onwards, that was only new vehicles. You could continue to use your existing vehicle. And they also used to be a plug-in car grant that was on offer that I think ended in 22, if I'm not mistaken. Originally, that was £5,000 for cars up to £50,000. Then it got dropped to 3,500 and cars under 32,000. And then it was reduced again to 3,000, 2,500, £1,500, and eventually scrapped. So that's what we've had in the past. Our current setup is we it's as follows. For any of you might be confused because it has changed. That ban is now delayed to 2035, not 2030, for the new diesel and petrol car sales. There's also a zero emissions, the ZEV mandate, as it's called, which has started this year, which are targets for the production of EVs for each company. Basically, you have to have a certain percentage of new cars and new vans that you sell in the UK that are EVs. And these targets go up every year. And these haven't changed. So actually, although the ban has been extended to 2035, these targets didn't change when that was altered. And if you don't comply with these fines, it's a with these targets, it's a £15,000 fine for cars for every vehicle that you go over your allowance, and £9,000 for vans. And to give you an idea of the targets, it's 22% in this year that you need to produce that are EVs for cars, and 10% for vans. And then it goes up next year for cars. It'll be 28, 33, 38, 52, rising to 66% in 2029 and 80% in 2030. And then on up beyond that through to 2035, when it will be 100%. And the van targets are similar. They're not as aggressive, but they go up every year too. So that is in force. And that's the reason why some manufacturers will have been rushing models to market or offering discounts or trying to shift cars that they've got in stock that they haven't sold so much of.
Just say,
Yeah, sort of weigh in on that.
just jumping on that. So, this affects the manufacturer, not the dealer. So, dealers like ourselves, we don't pay the fines, it's the manufacturer. However, what will happen is that towards the end of this year, for brands which are not hitting that 22% mark, there's going to be two possible outcomes. One is that the manufacturer is going to start offering discounts on EVs. We've already seen this early on with Honda back in February offering £15,000 off their ENY1.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
Basically, the Honda had sold like 20 electric cars in January. They thought, right, we need to up this massively. So they put a massive discount on and suddenly sold four or 500 cars in a weekend. Potentially, you know, it saves them pay. I suppose £15,000 off the RRP is not the same as paying a £15,000 fine because the RRP will have some profit margin in there. So it's, you know, potentially a less reduction overall. Which also interestingly does show that, you know, EV buyers are very price sensitive. And if you were to offer a good deal, suddenly all of those, you know, range anxiety worries just go straight away. And you just go, well, actually, you know, if I'm paying £180 a month, so less than I would pay on a Hyundai i10, I think I probably will go for that electric car that's like the same size as a Qashqai. So I think that in terms of, you know, financial incentives, it shows that they do work. And we know this from, you know, around Europe. But the problem we've got at the moment is that I think currently the UK is tracking on average at about 15, 16% still, which is basically where we were last year. There's not been a massive uptick in the registration of EVs, which there would need to be to hit 22%. The way of looking at it is you've got to sell 22% electric, or you can only sell 78% petrol. And so what the other alternative for manufacturers is that as we get towards the latter part of this year, they will have to restrict how many petrol or diesel or plug-in hybrid cars that they actually register. They have the ability
So
to.
you could actually be refused when you want to buy it,
Yeah, so effectively,
in
what we might
theory.
see, well, although the delivery
I mean,
becomes.
not with MG, because I mean, MG must sell a much higher percentage of EVs already, but some makes,
So some brands, so for example, I don't know, Ford, let's say, they could get to sort of October and say, okay, we can't register any more petrol, diesel, plug-in hybrid, whatever hybrid cars until January next year because we physically can't. If we don't sell any more petrol, diesel, petrol or whatever else cars, and we only register EVs from now till then, the fine will be reduced. There is a third way, which is that you could just basically ignore the target this year, and then whatever you miss this year, you could roll onto next year's target. However, you're setting yourself quite a bit of a fail there because if you only hit 10% this year instead of 22, that means you've got 12% extra to find next year, and next year's target 28. So that means you're going to be 40% EV next year, and that's it. You know, if you're going from 10 to 12% this year, that's not probably achievable either. So,
You get behind, and then you're just digging yourself into a bigger hole.
So I think that yeah, it's be interesting. I certainly think that for some manufacturers will be offering hefty discounts by the third and fourth quarter this year. Third quarter this year, of course, starts next week, so we might see some indication of that sort of by the end, by the end of the first week of July. The usually the finance offers, for example, are out from the manufacturers. We might see some discounting at that point of the EVs. We also might get start to see some of the restriction of some ordering profiles for certain other petrol or diesel or hybrid cars. So.
So I mean, in the US, I think they have a scheme like this, but they can trade between the manufacturers. They can buy credits off each other
You can do
to
that in the
offset it.
UK.
But
You can do
I
that in the
don't know
UK.
that there's anything like that here, is there?
Yeah, you can do that here. However,
Okay.
realistically, there's only sort of a few manufacturers. MG is currently one of them.
So I was wondering, could MG make money by selling spare
Yeah, so
credits?
effectively, if you've got a £15,000 credit that they can sell to, well, rather than pay £15,000 fine, it might be that you sell a credit for 10,000, let's say.
Yeah, you agree a price.
That might help MG cover some of their tariffs. The tariffs are going to go up from 10% to 38%. It might be that that takes comes in quite useful for them to not have to worry about raising their prices straight away. So it, we'll see. And the trouble with trading trading amounts is that it's wooden dollars, isn't it? It's not actually making the environment any better. An accountant.
No, but I guess it's one way of evening out supply and demand, and if manufacturers are
I'm sure
delayed.
there'll be a market of people hedging this, as there is with any other market like that that's being artificially
Big money
made,
to be
and there'll be
made.
people making money on making money without actually
Well,
buying any
Tesla's made a fortune
batteries.
out of these credits, so over the years, because they have obviously they're way ahead of any percentages in any of the states that they're required to sell.
I think it's, I mean, again, I know we're going to be talking more about politics, and this is a good example. It is a good thing that governments are trying to move some of these things forward in politics. Sometimes it's a bit blunt. However, you feel like if they don't do anything, then markets will never move forward in this. There won't be an incentive. There won't be an incentive to, in quotes, tidy up or clean up whatever it is that you deem is needing to be cleaned up. And so I think it's good. There will be problems with it. I'm sure we can all see a lot of problems in it coming out, and there will always be ways that you bend around the rules. And looking at something slightly different but similar, in housing, they turn around and said they wanted every house to be C, and there's like no way you can even get
Oh,
there on
the
certain
energy
houses.
performance
On the energy
requirements. Yeah,
efficiency of a
right.
house should be
Yeah,
C,
yeah,
and there's no way you can
yeah.
even get there on certain houses. So I think it's a good thing in
Yeah.
general term that there is a push to the manufacturers to say you have to be manufacturing these things, but I don't think it's gonna.
I think.
It may push it out. Miles, do you think it'll push it out sooner or later, or how do you feel?
I think the problem is that for manufacturers, they see it as being all stick, no carrot at the moment. That you've taken away the incentives for in terms of the grants, you've taken away the home charging allowances that there used to be. There's the cost of charging on the on public chargers is higher than at home. Part of that is due to the VAT that's charged on public charging versus domestic charging. There's not the appetite at the moment for a lot of people to get an electric car. And in fact, I think that what we're seeing, the early adopters, of which we all are, we all took the jump and we love the cars, and we still keep with them. But I think that for some people who haven't made the jump yet, there's so much negative media about, and the additional costs that have come up since obviously the increase in electricity costs since the Ukraine war, the general cost of living crisis, the interest rates going up as well means that the for most people the cost is a major factor as to why you're not going EV. And a lot of people now are seeing it as, and we're seeing this sometimes with particular fleets, is that a lot of fleets now are buying diesel vehicles, or they're buying diesel vans, for example, thinking that they can have one now and then they'll buy another one in 2029 before the 2030
So they
deadline.
can beat the deadline.
So they're going to get two turns of a vehicle, but they're maybe buying a year early now, so then they keep them 4 years and then buy another one in 2029. So I think that, yeah, it's in some ways we're seeing an increased demand for ICE vehicles at the moment, because some people are thinking, right, okay, to get into my change cycle, the right way. I need to be looking at, you know, changing my car now for another petrol car, which is
Sure. Okay, well, let's get on to the manifestos in a moment. Just finish off just a few of things, just so people are aware. You can still get a grant for a small van or a large van, 2.5 or £5,000 until 2025, but it's specific rules on qualifying vans only, and the government has details on the government gov.uk website. You can still get a contribution to a home charge point if you live in a flat, £350 or 75% off is there, but not if you are not, so not for the average homeowner. There is an initiative to get to 300,000 public charge points by 2030. There's a £381 million local EV infrastructure fund for councils, which is running into 2025, which is helping to pay for some of that. And all the new charge points have to accept contactless payment and clearly display their prices. I think that will come into force around 2025 for new ones installed from that point. And we currently have 60,000 public charge points. Now, Leo, you came across a useful map which could show us where we are with this.
So you're absolutely right. There's a map which I believe is the URL for it has been put in there. There are currently 59,670 charge points according to April 2024. That averages out per 100,000 population of 89 per charge points in the country per every 100,000 people, if that makes sense. That sounds great in a way, but the figures are very, very different depending on where you are and what you and although this map looks like all similarish colors, the graphics of how much each color is, you do need to drill in and see it because it but what looks very similar, it can be very, very different. So I live where I live in East London. No, I live in South, sorry, Southwest London. Southwest London, my count in my area, there's a roughly, hold on, I'm going to tell you because I can look at it by authority. In where I live, there is 460 chargers per 100,000 where I live. If I go up the road to another area which is not very far away, Hillingdon has 62 chargers. That's a massive, massive difference. And as we are talking slightly on the politics side, Hillingdon is conservative, and where I live is Liberal Democrat. And if you actually look at the swathe that goes across the centre of London, the swathe which is dark blue are predominantly Liberal Democrat and Labour councils who have put in lots of chargers against the Conservative ones who haven't at this time.
So
Have I
there's maybe
gone
some
too? Have
pop.
I gone close
No,
enough without having
no.
my feathers
I think
burnt about talking about politics?
anything factual. It's a fact
Yeah,
who
exactly.
the
And I think,
areas are
and obviously we're talking
affiliated to
about,
which party.
we are talking about the fact that they're being put in by local councils rather than national, and it is a national election. But as you know, that the national party leans very heavily on its local to enable or to facilitate the things that it wants to facilitate. And it is interesting that, you know, you see that certain parties have gone down the road of saying put in charges. When you actually drill this down even further, one of the things that's very interesting, some councils have gone for the 50 kilowatt or above chargers, which help particularly taxis. They've gone for public taxis. There's lots of country, lots of cities like Nottingham, where my son lives, which have gone and put in a huge amount for that area. But where they've been doing a lot where I live is the 4.2 kilowatt chargers which go in lampposts, which I believe, you know, that gets an average car overnight at 4.2 kilowatts. I think, Tom, would you say you can do
Yeah,
that?
especially if you're just topping up. I mean, most people in London, I imagine, are not emptying their battery every day. So yeah, it was
But
it, you're gonna have a so you normally get 6.5 maybe into the car on a 7 kilowatt charger. So with four, if it's 4.2 on the lamppost, you might get 3.5, 3.7.
I suppose you could
That's
get
gonna be
4.3
half as
if you.
much. So you're gonna get it in 10 or 12 hours. You're gonna get 60, 70%.
And as you're parking under a lamppost, if you put a solar panel on your dashboard, you get another half
Top
a
it up.
kilowatt in, and
Yeah, if
that's
only
it. But
I think
I
you need
think
a
it's
football pitch for
interesting.
that to work, but yeah.
I think it's interesting
Or
though that what
panels.
we're trying, what people are, you
Yeah.
know, the big thing that people are, you know, are the that a lot of people will tell you they live in flats and they live in
Yeah.
areas where they're the lamppost to me is a really interesting part. You know, we all
It's a
grew
good
up in
option.
that. I grew up in the time when every street consisted of parking meters with that you put 20p's in or whatever. Maybe we're going to see street furniture that looks like that coming back,
Yeah, I
that
certainly some
parking
councils are
spaces
doing
have
it.
that.
Yeah, some councils are doing it. I mean, I think partly it's party politics, but partly it's also which councils are on the ball and have applied for grants and been organised with getting suppliers and contracts let and how they arrange it. But yes, there's a good 30% of people who don't have off-street parking, who either live in houses or flats and need a solution that will work for them and can't guarantee that they have a space outside their house. So that's important. Okay, great. Very useful resource. Thank you. So let's move on and look at the parties themselves. And we'll start with the one that's most likely to win, according to the polls, which is the Labour Party. This is basically here we've got some quotes from the manifestos and some other information we've been able to pick up. So pretty much all the parties, well, not quite all of them, we'll come to that, but pretty much most of the parties say they're going to speed up the rollout of charge points. Not many of them have said how, and we can talk about what the practical barriers are, but Labour want to do that. They want to restore the date to 2030. So we've gone to the 2035 for the 100% EV for cars and vans, and they want to go back to 2030, which may well at this point be quite a challenge, particularly for manufacturers that haven't invested heavily in EVs up to now. And the other main policy is they want to have some kind of standardized method. So when you're buying a second-hand EV, you can reliably tell the state of health of the battery. You can understand in a clear way, maybe like a simple labeling scheme, like we have indeed for home insulation or consumer appliances, which says what percentage is there. So those are their main policies. But what do you think about those?
So my view of a number of those policies are spot on, starting in reverse of what you've just said, that why I take a car, get an MOT, why isn't the battery health? You know, it should be there. It should be there. It should be something that should be easily found and shown as anything else is. I think it's as important as knowing how many miles the car has done. And I think that's a very simple thing. I think rolling out chargers, as we said, you know, we're at 60,000, and I know there were targets. There's some big targets. I do think this will, it does make sense, and it's going to remove both of those things, remove the issue that I always come across when you, as soon as you talk about cars, is the battery's never going to last, and I need to charge it up every 4 seconds. So those two things make a huge amount of sense. Miles?
Yeah, I mean, the only problem I see with the standardization of information on the condition of batteries is that currently, the information about the battery health is not provided by the EOBD side of the ECU. So, car ECUs have basically got an EOBD side, which is the European Onboard Diagnostics, and then the other side, which is the manufacturer side of the ECU. And EOBD is used for emissions on petrol diesel cars. It's used for things like lambda readings and so on. It shows misfire events and it can show trouble codes. The manufacturer side has got a lot more information, and that's where, so there's basically a difference between the scan tool you buy from Lidl for 15 quid on the middle of Lidl versus a £2,000 diagnostic tool that you get from Autel or Scan Snap-on or wherever.
And
And
that's the issue of how it's measured, isn't it? Because it's not, if different manufacturers measure it in different ways.
yeah, so if it's an SIH calculation that's been done by a manufacturer, I mean, we had this famously with Nissan Leaf 30 kilowatt hour. They found that the battery was degrading too quickly, so they did a software update which then remapped the SIH to a different level. So you could have lost 2 bars
They
in your
look
battery.
better.
Sounds like you'd never do that with diesels or anything like
Oh,
that.
you're
Well,
thinking of Dieselgate, aren't you?
we've had a Nissan Leaf 38
I
times
think
10
we can.
SIH, and it
I
went.
think the point is that, where, you know, if I look at my iPhone now, my iPhone now does tell me the battery life.
Yes.
Whether I believe that battery life is
That's
absolutely accurate is another
Apple's
issue.
or whatever, or Samsung's
Suppose you can clock the
presentation of
mileage
it.
on a car as well, so digitally. So I suppose it's, the data is only as good as what the car thinks it is. But at the moment, there is no tool on the market which covers every model of every electric vehicle.
So there's a
Is
practical
that because
problem
it doesn't
reading it.
exist in OBD, or could it exist in OBD in the
It
future?
doesn't exist in OBD, and to be able to get that information out, you basically need to interpret the PIDs, the parameter IDs from the manufacturer side. You need to obviously know what those. Now, if obviously if it was mandated by government, I imagine all the manufacturers would have to submit that information, and there would
Information,
be a
yeah.
general, there would be an MOT tool which was
But I
created.
guess there's a practical question about dealers having the right kit and understanding of what to do, whether, if they're going to show it on the cars they sell, second-hand car dealers as well.
It ended up being, I suppose, a bit like a brake test. There'd be a one that's the official MOT test, and that's the one that they can get from various suppliers. And
So it's a good idea, but maybe
but
some practical challenges.
I think the whole point of some of these things is that you do want to go, what you need to go along a journey, and even if you aren't there at the moment, where we will get to from a consumer perspective, and it is a consumer perspective, we want to be able to know that that batteries have a certain life, the same as we want crash and not knowledge on how good a car is in that, and to get to the standards that people can easily understand. And I think that isn't a I think that it's a good policy to be pushing.
Good idea to have it.
We've looked at
I
aftermarket
agree.
solutions for our business as to the way in which we could show the battery health on used EVs. And some of the tools out there have got, coverage on, let's say, 90% of the electric vehicles that are currently out there, which are very good. But those, at the moment, they're sort of on subscription. You're paying around sort of £10 per battery test,
That's
which
expensive.
it works out. Yeah, it works out expensive, unless you're able to charge that cost onto a customer, which again, if you're adding £10 onto the cost of an MOT, that, inflationary figure would probably not be ideal. So, yeah, I think it's a good idea, but I say it would need a lot of manufacturer assistance to actually sort that out. I noticed that there are other pledges from
Go on.
the other pledges from Labour. The interesting one there, which I'd really be keen on, is reducing car insurance costs.
Yes, they haven't said how, but they've
No,
said they want to do that.
it's one of those where, I think car insurance costs have got prohibitive for a lot of people. I know people who are being priced out of their car effectively because the cost of insurance has gone stupid. And I know, I understand there are, certain things like, for example, Range Rover thefts, where, they're so simple, they were so simple to steal. It would take 2 seconds with a laptop and a bit of kit. You could just, unlock the car and steal it, and then it'd be in a container or a ship on its way to Africa or mainland or Eastern Europe or whatever within, 24 hours. I think that, obviously that has increased the costs for the insurance companies. And then with in terms of EVs, the lack of knowledge from the repair side, so not, obviously from manufacturers like ourselves and for dealers that, are under the manufacturer, but from your, body shops and the people who actually have to repair them, their knowledge level on EVs is not adequate enough to for them to have confidence and say, okay, we've assessed this vehicle, we can see that everything, it needs a new wing, it needs a new sill, it needs this and this and this. However, it also needs the battery moving from the vehicle for assessment, because we need to see if it's rippled anywhere on the battery casing. If it is, then it's, and that cost of dropping the battery out of the car, depending on the vehicle, as to how easy that is to access, could run into a couple of £1,000 just to have the right kit to be able to do that. They might not have that on the actual, in their within their
And
workshop.
the right training as well for
Sure.
handling
So
high
it,
voltage
so
battery.
a lot of EVs are being written off for fairly inconsequential damage because they're not willing to take a punt on whether the battery's been compromised or not. And it's tricky because I suppose in, if it was a cracked sump on a petrol vehicle, you'd see the oil leak from this from the sump. You'd leave it parked up in the for a day or so, you'd see there's a drip underneath, you'd know to investigate that. But with a battery, it's not, as easy as that. So I think that realistically it's how they do that insurance, isn't it? I would like to see the cost down, because I think for some people it has got prohibitive.
I think the last thing maybe to pick out on the additional pledges is they want to build more battery gigafactories. This was talked about on the Everything Electric podcast, which was out today, where they stated on that podcast a figure of around 5 billion for a battery factory. It's the rough cost. So this 1.5 billion would go some step towards it, but would this be another British Volt situation like we've had with the current government
I
where
think that's the problem as well, is that at
it's
the moment,
struggling?
I mean, one of the reasons why China is making a lot of battery packs is because they've got access to all the stuff there in China. You know, they have the mines for lithium and everything else. And, you know, and so they've got really short supply lines. Whereas in the UK, if we wanted to create gigafactories, we're going to have to ship all those raw materials to the UK. So I think that realistically, yeah, it's potentially it's going to, you know, that's the downside. I think, and British Volt was an example of how, you know, how to take money and spend it all and not have anything to show for it.
Okay, let's move on to the Conservatives. So they have some initiatives on automated vehicles. They're going to pass legislation which allows self-driving and other automations. They're going to also enhance the charging infrastructure, they say, and they're going to deliver what they've already put in place, ZEV mandate that we've talked about. They're going to protect us against competition from China, although they haven't said if they're going to act or not to follow the EU. And they want to support the domestic industry. And then there's a few additional ones. What do you make of these policies? Is there anything that's changed there from what we've already got?
No, I mean, the one thing I'd pick up, which you didn't just mention at the bottom, is the reverse ULEZ
Oh,
expansion.
yes. Yeah.
It's happened, and I think it's very hard to put that back into that. They won one seat because of it last time, I think, so they're going to keep it on there, but that's the hope, to get one seat back, but or to keep one seat. I think it's gone. And in reality, is although it's not great, and I know there's a lot of people who will be now shouting at me for it, I think these are the things that you have to sometimes move forward on. The one that I like very much is the automated cars. I do believe in it. I fundamentally believe in automated cars. You only have to look at the figures. In America, it's 30,000 people a year are killed by car accidents. In the UK, it's over five a day on average, and we never hear about it because it happens every day. Today there'll be five, tomorrow there'll be five, and it'll keep going. Automated cars will reduce that massively, because most car accidents are caused by the driver. So I think that's a good point. But I'm not sure these are leading points, and I'm not sure they're not big issues. They're just things
Well,
that
big issue maybe in London, but not perhaps less elsewhere.
maybe.
What do you think, Miles?
Autonomous cars. Again, I live in a more rural area, and you know, we don't have white lines painted on our roads, and we don't often have much of a surface on our roads. So I think that autonomous cars struggle on surfaces like that. I know, for example, that you know, my car that's got automatic lane keeping, I have to turn it off on some of these roads because it just wants to throw me into ditches all the time. And that's not an MG, that's on the Hyundai. So I think that,
Yeah, same for me, by the way.
So I think autonomous cars have potentially got a chance, you know, for I love getting on a motorway, putting on on smart cruise, setting my lane keep, and basically just my hands on the wheel. I'm not having to panic, you know, and it's kind of doing 90% of the job for me. So I think that that's great. I think autonomous cars have got a great solution for that, but I think that on more rural single lane roads like we've got here, there's a long way to go before it's going to be able to actually do fully autonomous driving in that sense.
Yeah, I
However,
mean,
I think that
I
anything that
agree with you because they just don't have roads like that in the US. Not typically, they're much better provisioned. I mean, Devon, for example, where I live,
I would agree and
we've got more
disagree. They,
lanes. We've
yeah,
got
they
more little
do, but
lanes here than we.
they also have a lot more dirt roads than we do in certain
They do have
areas.
dirt roads, but the dirt roads
However,
are much bigger.
absolutely. However, I don't think it's an all or nothing with
No,
autonomous
I
cars.
agree.
I think Miles summed it up. Driving in London nowadays, in my five, I just click that third stalk literally as soon as I leave the traffic light, and I follow the car in front of me, and I do that
Traffic
all the time, all the time,
jam.
all the time. It's the simplest way, and hopefully keeps the number of points off my license.
And Ophra Hill on the chat says autonomous cars will have to cope with the pothole swerve, which they absolutely will before they'll work well over here, certainly in Devon. But I take your point, and I would love to be able to do something else on the motorway rather than concentrate on driving all the time. That would be great. All right, let's move on to the Liberal Democrats. So I think they have the most to say about EVs from what I've seen. They want to make it cheaper and easier to switch. So they're going to go back to 2030 as the zero emission target. They're also going to add charging points, including on street points, and mandating ultra fast chargers at service stations. They're also going to upgrade the national grid and local grid to permit faster supply of new charging points. They'll cut VAT on public charging to 5%, and they'll require that all charging points have a bank card. They're also going to reinstate the EV car grant, they say, so that you'll be able to get paid for, get a grant for buying a new EV. So this sounds like a fairly comprehensive plan. I like the VAT on public charging. It doesn't seem fair that I get 5% on my home electricity and somebody who can't charge at home doesn't.
Well,
I absolutely agree. I mean, one of the things I find, I have the Electroverse card. Everything I charge when I'm out goes back onto my home Octopus bill, but it's at different rates. And, I'm paying for it on one the same piece of paper. I would expect it to be the same cost.
Miles, you can say.
I was just going to say that I think that's all very sensible. I think in terms of EV car grants, I actually don't think, I mean, this is controversial because someone's a car dealer, obviously free money should be welcome, but I don't think that the EV grant in the way that it was last time works particularly fairly. I think that in some ways a scrappage scheme type device
It's
or
fairer,
is fair, or potentially looking at, something for used vehicles. Like in Scotland, obviously they had the 0% finance over 5 years for EVs, which I think was a really good scheme for used EVs. Specifically, and whether some sort of low rate finance type thing like that would be useful for the UK market, for the English market, should I say, rather than just Scotland. I think that if you're currently a lot of the people who are complaining most about EVs being too expensive and everything are the people who can't afford to buy a new car, and the used cars that they've got on offer are Nissan Leafs with 9 bars and 50 mile range. If you're looking at a car for sub £4,000, which most people would do as a used car in purchase. I think that that is a very limited pool that you can choose from. And they're probably not credit worthy enough to be able to get a particularly
You
good,
won't,
a low rate
or
finance.
afford the payments or whatever.
Or for, well, I mean, a lot of people would prefer to pay, 150 quid a month and 4 grand out. But at the same time, if you can't get your finance for £150 a month because you've been told your credit history is not good enough and you're therefore going to be a higher rate, APR, 17.9% instead of 9% APR, it's going to cost you £220 a month, the same car that could have cost you 150 credit history. So I think that, yeah, some sort of government-backed low rate loan for financing would probably work well for used EVs, and that, or some sort of scrappage scheme for new
Well,
might work.
talking of scrappage schemes, if we come on to the Green Party, they pledge one. So they want an extensive vehicle scrappage scheme to support a rapid transition to EVs. 5 billion a year put aside for this by the end of the parliament. They also want to roll out lots of EV charging points, as do many other parties. They want an end to new road building. They want all petrol and diesel vehicles replaced by EVs within a decade. So they actually actively want to take ICE cars off the road, but through a scheme where you're paid or subsidised to do that. They want to restore the fuel duty escalator, introduce road pricing, and basically shift us away to meet our net zero targets much more quickly than the other parties are pledging. I've talked about an end to sales of new petrol and diesel vehicles by 2027, which is only 3 years away, and an end to being allowed to use a petrol or diesel vehicle by 2035, which no one else has brought up.
That's not.
What do you feel about this? Is this practical? Is it
Don't think it's
realistic?
popular at all. So, and this is one of the reasons why the Greens, in my view, don't get the representation that they probably should do, is always go a little bit to the point of militant and put the backup of a lot of people. So, if you say to people, and I go to car show. I'm a car enthusiast. I like going to car shows. Obviously, I drive an EV. The other weekend, I was at a car show with an MG4, a Hyundai Ioniq 5, a Kia EV9, and I actually had a diesel Isuzu pickup with me as well. But the only cars that we talked about really were the electric cars. Nobody bothered with the diesel pickup. And the reason the pickup was there was because Isuzu is launching an EV version, so we just want to talk about that as well. But everyone was, coming up to talking to us about the electric vehicles. But typically, I think that, that lots of people at that show there had, there was 1967 Mustangs. So there was, the Northwest Mustang owners group were there. Now, if you'd said to them, okay, you're going to have to get rid of your car that you've put blood, sweat, tears, money into, if you said to someone with a 1967 Mustang, you're going to have to get rid of this and get a Tesla, they're going to go, no, over my dead body, because they love that car. They were there in the peeing down rain on a Sunday morning at 8:30 in the morning to show off their car, trying to get it across a muddy field to so then clean the wheels again and tires again. They love that car, and they would
They're
not
not
be
going to do it, are they?
I think the point, the you know, I would agree with Miles here that the aspiration of where the Greens Party goes just goes to beyond the level that actually most of us can bear with and live with. It's just taking it to an extreme, and it feels like you're penalizing people for either their passion or for actually what they can do or where they're sitting at.
I mean,
And it's
I've
just too much. It's like turning around and saying all coffee drinkers need to drink green tea because it would be better for them. And it's like, I don't want to drink green tea, I want to drink coffee.
And it's the same with the vegan argument as well. If you say to people, everyone has to be vegan, we know that a vegan diet is less harmful to the environment. But if you, but people, but a lot of people like meat.
If
Yeah, I
I
mean,
look
there
at
is
the
a
core bit, the
few
one core bit that I
caveats to
don't
it.
like
Yeah, go
is,
on.
the pushing to say that they want to have more fast chargers. I actually don't think fast chargers are the right result or the right
But not the only
solution for
thing
the
we need.
problem. No, I don't. I actually think the more we need to get it people away from the fact that they think they need to fast charge every single time they take the car out of the garage. That's the thing. They need to be able to, you need to feel comfortable that your car can be, will be slow charged when you're out at a supermarket, when you're doing this, when you're doing
More
that. And then you
destination
only need the
charging.
fast charges when you actually are on the motorway. And
I mean,
that's
that's a
what.
good that is a good point that if you can have good public sorry, good private charging, home charging provision, whether it's on the street or charge points at the home and where you're going, so places of work, shopping destinations, leisure areas, the destination charging, then there's much less need for the rapid en route charging. When you're doing a long journey, you might need it, but apart from that, and it does get a lot of the headlines. It's the exciting thing to have with the high charge speeds in the new types of charger that come out, but maybe not the most crucial thing for a lot of people. I mean, I would sort of say with the Greens, you probably can. There might be an exemption for classics. That's possible. And they have talked about lots of support for people to phase out petrol and diesel. They haven't given any details of what that would look like. I imagine it would be very expensive if you were actually going to pay market price to take someone's car off them, and then you'd have to give them an equivalent electric car. It does sound difficult, but that's what they're about. Let's move on to the other parties. So those are some of the bigger parties. So the Reform Party. There's been a lot of no in the manifesto in the Reform Party. So there's a no to ULEZ, a no to LTNs, the low traffic neighbourhoods that some people have had an issue with. That's where they close off residential streets and try and funnel traffic to the main routes. A no to net zero, that's going to be scrapped. A no to bans, any ban on new petrol or diesel cars. And no legal requirement, no zero emission mandate anymore. We're going to abolish that and basically say you can have an electric car if you want it, but there's going to be no subsidy, no support for it. And I think they also have some initiatives on reducing the cost of petrol
So
as well.
my view on reform is basically that when they're saying about getting rid of net zero, it wouldn't actually happen because car manufacturers like MG, like Nissan, like all the rest of them, have got other countries which around the world, which are all to, going to net zero. And so you're not going to continue making 5,000 petrol cars for just because the government there hasn't banned them, because you're going to continue just making what you're making in the other factories. I think that it's and it's daft if Reform think that that the UK is so insular and that all these cars are going to be made by British Leyland, and they're going to be with Union Jacks on the roof, then it's not the case, is it? We're not talking
I
about.
think you're seeing the extremes here of green on one side and reform on the other. I don't know if I've got my hands in the right way around. And they are the extremes of both of those arguments. One is saying yes to everything on one side, and one is saying no to everything on one side. They're good. They are good talking points to hear as to what. I think Miles has just come up with a very valid point there, though, that that we aren't in a single country that is the only place, and most of the car manufacturing, even if it isn't made, it's still got to be made. There's lots of right-hand drive countries like Thailand, Singapore, all of these places, India, that will all be going in the same direction anyway that we're going to, and that's where the markets are going to be.
Absolutely. Well, moving on to the devolved administrations, we couldn't find anything from Plaid Cymru about their plans. The SNP have pledged to remove VAT from on-street charging, but only on-street charging, as I
Remove that,
understand it.
not bring it down to 5%, but just remove it completely.
Remove it, apparently. And they've talked about strengthening incentives to purchase cleaner vehicles by having a low-income EV car leasing fund backed by at least £500 million to enable 50,000 EV leases a year for low-income families. And this, I think, is slightly different from what other parties have put forward, because it targets those who can least afford it. So
That's a
that's an
very,
interesting policy.
I think that's a really good policy, to be fair. I think that that and this is where perhaps when we had a coalition government, sometimes these ideas were shared between parties. Somehow we there
And
was more.
I think that one of the things that is coming out on all of them, to some extent or a less extent, is about the public charging and how that at the moment feels a little bit somewhere between daylight robbery, highway robbery, and just a make it up as you go along pricing, and for no real reason. And it needs to, that's something where, with VAT charged on it and other things, it just doesn't make sense that there is a complete disparity between what happens if you can have a home charger and what happens if you are forced into a public area. And I think that's it. If all the parties start doing that and making effort in that area, then I think we would be in a much better place.
I mean, I was just
Yeah, amen to
going
that.
to say that.
Absolutely.
To give an example of that, I charge at home now. I'm with E.ON. I pay 6.9 pence per kilowatt hour. So my 77 kilowatt hour battery, it costs me £5.13, 31 to charge. The same battery at, well, 79 pence per kilowatt hour on a rapid, is costing £60.83. So, you're looking at a difference of £55. So
That's huge.
it's close to sort of 11 times the cost. And I think
Interestingly, the pricing of public charging in Europe is way, way lower. Way, way lower for
around
public
sort of
charging in
25,
Europe.
30%, I believe. So,
Yeah, I think that would transform things. Okay, well, guys, look, we're coming up on the hour. We tried to keep it shorter. We've not managed 45 minutes, but we can go for an hour. I hope people, you found this interesting to hear what's going on, where we're at, where we're going, what the parties have to offer. Maybe that'll influence your votes. Let us know. But otherwise, it remains for me to say you can find the audio version of this podcast on all good podcast providers. Just search for the MGEVs Community Podcast. That's it for us tonight and our new shorter format. Please give us feedback as to how you found it. And many thanks to all our volunteer moderators who keep the forums running smoothly. Alb, A Real Human, Coulomb, and Rolf. And many thanks to Stuart and the podcasters like ourselves who give up their evenings to share our wisdom with the community. Particular thanks to me for putting together some of the topics for tonight. And thanks for Stuart too. And my thanks to Leo and to Miles as well. Thanks, guys. And
Thank
if you
you.
found
Thank you. It's
this.
an interesting conversation. I think that's it. Sometimes you have to go around a conversation, and while it may not be about MG, it affects us all.
Absolutely. And if you found this podcast useful, please click on the like button. Also, if you subscribe and click the notification bell, you'll get notified next time we go live, which is particularly useful if we change the day at the last minute. We'll be back soon with our new format, and we'll be asking you what you'd like to see, what questions you'd like answered, what topics you'd like to focus on. And please keep us updated on that. What would you like to hear us discuss? And we can bring in people who have knowledge on specific areas. We're still very, very keen to welcome any members, any owners from outside of the UK to join us on the podcast. So please get in touch. And otherwise, I shall say good night and thank you very much, guys. Goodbye.
Good night.
Bye.